The Adam Clark Football Academy.
It's all about the ball.
Yeah.
Tonight, we find a way.
And they knocked off Colquitt County to be the 7A champs in Georgia in 2018.
We're going to attack them like they've never been attacked.
We are the Adam Clark Football Academy.
What's up, coaches? This is Tad Lowe with the Adam Clark Academy, and I am here with the man himself, Coach Adam Clark. Thank you for joining us today. We're going to sit down. I want to hear about your story. And I want to talk about this new project that you're working on, the Adam Clark Football Academy, how that came to be, and you know, the goal of helping all these coaches utilize all the learnings that you have over the years. So, but before we get into that, let's learn about you. Let's talk about you. Tell me about Adam Clark. How did you start getting into football and become a football coach?
Yeah, Tad, I appreciate it, man. Excited to talk about this project. Excited to kind of fill you guys in on what we're up to now. But again, just kind of thinking about where we are now and going back, you know, obviously everything starts from when you're young, you know, and I was just a sports junkie. I mean, I played everything, every season. There wasn't a day after school that I didn't have a practice. You know, I was a baseball player, football player, wrestler.
Oh, yeah.
Loved it all. Baseball was probably my true passion, believe it or not, growing up. But I did always have a weird just affinity for the strategy of football. And that started at a real young age. But again, playing all that stuff, obviously, like everybody, had these aspirations, wanted to go play in the pros, college, all this stuff. And I was pretty good at everything, but I wasn't great at anything. And mm-hmm. DNA kind of weighs in at some point, too. So I go to Georgia Southern, not playing sports, tons of intramurals. Didn't know what I wanted to do. Didn't declare a major, but thought it was going to be maybe business like everybody else, you know, get mm-hmm. into marketing. I don't know. I didn't have any idea. Fell in love with history, got a history major, and then I was like, what in the heck am I going to do with this? Mm-hmm. So luckily I got, as we were doing like our practicum work and all that stuff, I got paired up with a PE coach who was coaching middle school football. I'm 20 years old at the time, and I was like, man, that sounds cool. Do you need any help? And like any coaches out here know, like, yeah, free help, I'll mm-hmm. take it,
yeah.
You know? So that's kind of where it started, you know, and I just fell in love with it. I coached 3 years of middle school football for Southeast Bullock Middle. Then ended up my last year in college was able to join the varsity staff. I coached receivers and DBs, and again, just loved it. So when I graduated, I was able to, I was fortunate to get in a great school system in Forsyth County. Hooked on with South Forsyth. And believe it or not, the reason I was able to get that job, I was on like a coaching job board. And I'd been posting stuff about, hey, aspiring football coach, history degree, this and that. Nothing. The moment I put in also willing to coach wrestling, I got a call immediately.
Wow.
And maybe that's something that some coaches can take away mm-hmm. from there, right? You know, being well-versed, being able to and willing to coach other sports, it's super valuable, mm-hmm. super valuable, A, to get you in the door, but B, to teach you a lot of things.
Well, it sounds like there's some humility there, right? Because you know you're looking for a coaching job, but you're putting yourself out there saying, but I'm willing to do
absolutely
anything.
Yeah, you know, beggars can't be choosers. And, yeah, so again, just was... I had a really successful wrestling career in high school, and honestly, it was probably what I was, you know, DNA again, mm-hmm. should have been doing. I just didn't, you know, it was cutting weight and all that stuff. But anyways, Coach Kevin Gandarty was the one who reached out to me and remembered me from high school, and got me an interview at South Forsyth and landed the job and hooked on with the freshman coaching staff. Mm. Just went up to the head coach, said, hey, I'm a football coach. I know I got the job with the wrestling team, but I really want to coach. And he's like, all right, you want to be my head freshman coach? I'm like, sure. And again, talk about some humility. I'd already been a varsity coach. We'd had some success. But again, you want to get your foot in the door. And you want to be willing to do whatever is needed to be done and improve yourself. So I'm coaching football and wrestling at South Forsyth. And then an opportunity, a new school was opening up, West Forsyth. And again, just leveraging connections. I'd put in a resume, and probably 2 months had gone by, heard nothing back. And I reached out to my old wrestling coach and was just talking to him. And he's like, you know, Dennis Strami, the old head coach mm-hmm. at Parkview, is going to be the AD there. Let me put out a word. literally in 48 hours, I get a bounce back from my email. And it's like, hey, would you be interested in coming in for an interview?
Mm-hmm.
So again, everything, guys, man, network, network, network is so critical. Mm-hmm. And never burn bridges. And, you know, just do your best to foster those networks. And don't be afraid to reach out, you know.
And I love this story so much because a lot of what the program, the Adam Clack Football Program, is designed to do is really designed for coaches to take that next step in their career, either looking to become a coach or they're looking to go from being a coordinator to a head coaching role. And this whole program is all about, you know, these life lessons that you've learned to help these coaches get to that next step. Let's dial in there. Talk to me about the importance of connections and how that helped you with West Forsyth.
Well, I think, you know, this is a people business. You know, we can get down in the X's and O's, and that's fun to do, but it's all about relationships, how you relate to your players, how you relate to your coaches and coaches outside your network. And the one thing I always have loved about the coaching community and why I'm so excited about this project is coaches – We have egos, man, and we want to pound that chest, but man, we really are some of the most sharing and you know, we love this kind of fraternity that we've built. Mm-hmm. You go to a Glazier clinic, you go to the AFCA and things like that, and you just see thousands of coaches who are just chopping it up. Cocktail napkins are coming out, the pens are out, X's and O's are everywhere, and it's really a special thing.
Yeah.
And it's some of the most unique relationships I've ever had. But you know what's also cool is get outside of just the coaching circles. I've learned so much from people who either, A, don't coach, you know, could be in any walk of life, administrators, businessmen. But also, you know, as I go back to kind of getting that job at West, and I'm coaching wrestling and football as well, I found two of my biggest mentors there, and one of them being Dennis Stromme, mm-hmm. you know, and working for him as an assistant wrestling coach. And, God, I mean, he was just – I just learned so much about – what it takes to truly kind of have a vision of what you want to see, you know, what he thought good wrestling was, and he drilled it down to the fundamentals. And I remember being like, man, I'm tired of doing these everyday drills, essentially, mm-hmm. where we're working on wrist control and we're working on escapes from bottom and grabbing the ankle, and don't we want to get into some of these, you know, kind of more exotic moves? And he's like, no, we got to get this right first. And we went from a young program. I mean, we just started the school. And within 2 years, we're wrestling in, like, state championship duels matches. And we're placing state champions. And you're seeing these wrestlers, they all have a similar style.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, that really relates to any sport. I don't care if it's baseball, if it's tennis, if it's, you know, football, whatever. Like, you need to have a good plan, a great vision of what you want to see, not only from a cultural standpoint, but also from what does it look like on the field.
Yeah.
And when you really commit to building into that and just an unwavering commitment, so to speak, when you know it's what right looks mm-hmm. like, you'll just be surprised at, you know, what the returns will mm-hmm. be with that consistent kind of hammering of the rock, if you will, you know, hammering of the stone. And I learned that from him, and he's become a great friend of mine, like I said, a mentor. His son, Steven Stromme, comes on staff with mm-hmm. us. We're co-teaching together. We're creating U.S. history lesson plans. And, you know, Steven ends up being a head wrestling coach, but he was also a freshman football coach. And he fell in love with football so much, mm-hmm. and our relationship grew that, you know, as we fast forward and we went to Milton, I brought him on as with me as my assistant head mm-hmm. coach.
Yeah.
So you just never know, you know, like be open, speak to as many people as you can, be willing to listen and learn, and you'll be amazed at what you pick up.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about, I want to dial in on that because obviously you've built great relationships, not only from having mentors, but that mentor relationship also led to a great relationship you have with Coach Stromme, who you have, you know, kind of rode along with you in your career. But tell me about, I want to talk about a little bit about West and what it's like going from a coordinator position into a head coach position. How does the team feel about that? Because I imagine there's probably a lot of people vying for that job. How do you kind of get, you know, people on board, aligned, you know, ready to move forward and you know, the Adam Clack way?
Yeah, so, you know, kind of backing that up and diving into that. So Frank Hepler is the head coach of West Forsyth. Super successful down in Florida, and he's coming up and taking this new program over. And I was just a young 25, 26, 27-year-old who's always up on the board, new idea, whatever. Like, they loved my energy, and you know, I was kind of the kid brother around, but they saw something, you know, and that's what I learned from Frank. He was able to identify talent in his coaching staff and then empower them, support them and empower them to go out and do, which I think a lot of us struggle with, you know. It takes a lot of confidence in yourself to be willing to let go and let somebody else do. So I'm an assistant coach on that staff for 4 or 5 years. I get an opportunity to move up as a coordinator. And again, you know, I know he had some reservations. I'm unproven, and you know, this is my first time. But he let me go, you know, and I gave him everything that I had. I was not going to let him down, and I never forgot that. And I wanted to emulate that when I became a head coach. So 3 years as a coordinator, Frank has some family things going on. He goes back down to South Florida. He steps away. And so it's my, I'm ready. I'm ready for this position. I had actually just interviewed for a big job at the University of Parkview back then. Didn't get it, but was able to put my plan together. I worked and again, I get that interview because of the relationship with Dennis Stromme. So again, back to relationships. But I was able to put my plan together. I spent months putting it together and really, really dialed into, you know, what an Adam Clack program should look like, be like. So when Frank stepped away, I was able to really attack that job and attack that interview. And when the cool part, I was the only person from our staff that interviewed. So I had the support of our staff, and they were excited to see me and was hopeful that I would get that opportunity. And sure enough, I was fortunate enough too. But to your point, I would say that was one of the harder things that, especially just from my age and experience. But when you go from peer to head coach, there is a different dynamic shift, and it's really hard to separate the two. And you start, you know, maybe some lessons I learned in those early days. I was doing a lot of things that I thought a head coach was supposed to do. And I think if you can take one thing away from this, like, yeah, it's great to learn. It's great to watch others and to get ideas and to study experts, to study good and bad. But at the end of the day, you got to be you. You know, you got to be you. And I would definitely go back in those first couple of years and say, you know what, you had good ideas. There's nothing wrong with what I was trying to do and how I approached it. But there were so many times when I was interjecting just because I thought I should.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm saying things because I thought that's what a head coach was supposed to say. So, you know, it's hard. It's hard because it is the coaching staff is such a special bond. And especially when you're on that peer-to-peer level, you really gotta take some time and think about, okay, now what does this look like,
right. You know? One of the things that you've mentioned before, I heard you just talk about it a little bit ago, the learning, and I hear you kind of get into it right now, is you've got to empower your leaders to lead, right?
Right.
That's one of your life lessons that you put out there. Empower your leaders to lead. Tell me how did you put that into effect at West?
Well, you know, it really started, I was still the offensive coordinator, which, again, there's nothing wrong with being a head coach and still an offensive coordinator and doing some of those things. But I was trying to do too much at times. But one thing that I think I definitely leaned into quickly, maybe not so much that first year, but I recognized is, hey, I got great guys on this staff. I got a great defensive coordinator. I got a great special teams coordinator who are running and rocking and rolling with this stuff. I don't have to step on their toes. You know, I need to make sure I'm having conversations and that we're aligned and that I'm abreast of what's going on. But as long as everything's good there, I don't need to just start to interject on game day because I feel like that's what a head coach is supposed to do. So I felt like I did some of that early on, and then I really stepped back. Another thing at West is, you know, looking at your staff and, you know, maybe it's a formal development and a lot of times it's informal development of your staff, but looking from within and seeing who's motivated to do things and giving them opportunities to do more. You know, it could be administrative type jobs. It could be, you know, something as simple as taking over equipment handout. Or it could be, you know, hey, there's another role. You're a freshman coach and now there's a role on the varsity staff. Instead of necessarily going out and looking somewhere else, why not look from within and you start to promote those guys and start to really have a keen eye on okay, who's really motivated to take their game to the next level? And I think that was something that we've had a lot of success with at West, and certainly when we got to Milton, of developing, you know, from within, and giving guys more responsibility when they clearly show they want it and they've earned it, and then trusting them to do and supporting them. That's another big thing. Not just, okay, go swim with the sharks now. Like, no. When you step into new roles, you still need support. You still need help with direction sometimes. Mm-hmm. But then being able to get out of the way and kind of like a good parent, you know, hey, I'm going to tell you everything I know, but at some point I've got to let go.
Yep.
And I need to be there, maybe not to catch you, but maybe to pick you up, you know, pick you up, give you a hug. Let's learn our lessons. Hey, if you're working as hard as you can and you're competent at doing, we're all going to make mistakes. But we're going to go attack the next one with you know, with some lessons from this last loss, or some, you know, some feedback from this failure. And, you know, you'll be surprised at what starts to happen collectively when you build an environment like that.
Tell me about, so you mentioned Milton, so let's talk about that transition. You're at West, you're there for a couple of years. How does the opportunity for Milton come up? Why do you make the decision to go from West over to Milton?
Yeah, so I was at West for 10 years and 3 years as a head coach. And, you know, felt like we were still having success. Never had a losing season the entire time we were at West. I don't even know that West has still had a losing season, which is kind of a weird aside. But you know, making the playoffs, doing things. But you know, we played this Milton team several times. And we was actually 3-0 against them. Mm-hmm. But I just seen this community from afar, and they really did stand for excellence in everything. I mean, from academics to the arts. Baseball, national, you know, exposure, basketball. But the football team was always just kind of just in the middle, you know. They would have great players. They would have great moments. But they would always just kind of fall back. I mean, I would even see it in our games, you know. Great competitive first half, and then somehow we pull away in the second half. And it was just a challenge that I saw an opportunity there, you know. Wasn't like it was a broken program, like you got to build it from the studs up. But I just felt like, you know, I have a very good understanding of what this community is and what it demands and kind of what's behind the scenes there. And it was really a leap of faith on my in my mind a little bit. One that when I actually got the job, it was probably 50-50 split of my peers who were like, awesome. And some of them like, what the hell are you doing? You know, why are you leaving a great situation? I was like, well, I just see something there. This is a good situation at West. I think we can make this one great. I really do. And I felt like I had a great plan and a good understanding of how to do so. And then you go back to another relationship and connection. So a former member of that West staff is now the AD of the Milton program, of the Milton athletic department. And we always kept in touch, and we just started talking one day. And it's funny, it was after the week six game in 2016 when Milton, when West comes into Milton and we end up winning by 3 scores, I think it is. And I heard that there was some trouble and you know, just kind of some rumblings. And I just let him know. It was like, hey, if something happens, I'm interested. And, you know, from there, you know, it kind of unfolded the way it did. And a year later, I'm interviewing against 150 people. And go in with the plan that I thought could win and could work. Again, kind of a philosophy and a mentality of how I went into that interview that I thought would resonate and I truly believed in, and was able to land the job. And I was super excited to be in this community that so many other people were excited to be a part of.
You've mentioned that. I've seen your work. I've seen how detailed you are and how much thought you put not only the strategy, but then the plan to execute that strategy. I'm sure a lot of coaches out there maybe have been in the same exact situation where they're interviewing for a position. You've got 100 qualified candidates that they're going up against. What do you think separated you from those other candidates for this Milton job?
Well, you know, I think I've been fortunate or just wired to be someone who, if I see a problem, you know, or if I see a way it can be better, I'm not afraid to try. You know, fail small, fail often. You know, a lot of times I've heard that said, and I believe in that wholeheartedly. Like, just because you maybe not have the exact right plan right now, if you're scared to try, you know, it's always just going to to be there, or it's never going to be as good as it can. So I think the lessons that we learned at West, where we were just always constantly trying to improve and identifying some of these problems, and you know, whether it be a personnel issue or whether it be how we operate in the off season, or you know, how we build to peak at the right time, I brought that information and I brought those experiences in with real detailed examples of not only what my plan is and what my vision is, but also, hey, here is where, you know, I failed. This is what I learned. So this is now what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that type of information and that type of methodology with how I interviewed, but I also did a lot of research and you know, my own homework on, all right, what are some of the problems here? Why is this job open? And if it fit my philosophy authentically, I was ready to speak to it. And I think I just went in there with kind of that mindset and those details, and I could lay it out for the interviewing committee that this is who I am, this is what I'm going to do, and this is our plan.
That's great. So you got the Milton job, right? Milton is a good program. It's not the program it is today. So let's talk about that. How do you go in there? And I mean, on day one, you're like, this is going to be a national program. What does that look like? What does that transition look like? And how do you set the vision for Milton?
Well, I remember in the interview, I said, I feel like this can be a national brand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a program that's had 3 playoff wins in 55 years. So people thought I was a little crazy. But but again, I did see the potential. There's great players. There's great support. I mean, again, we've already talked about all the things that were in place. But it goes back to what we were just talking about. I didn't put together an interview plan. I put together a plan and a vision that I thought would work for this program, mm-hmm. for this team, for this community. And so as day one goes, I've already shared with the administration what this plan and what this vision is, and also sought feedback from them. What do I need to do to be successful for you?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of that first leadership team, if you will, me and the administrative team. But the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take that very same plan and I'm going to cast that vision to every major stakeholder in that program. And I'm going to do it as early as I can, as often as I can, consistently. And so from the players to the parents to the staff I inherited and to the staff that we put together, we're all going to get behind this idea of what the broad vision of how we're going to take this program from not just good or not just okay, but to great.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to work together. It's not just, hey, here it is, and everybody's going to march. It's, you know, I say it's kind of like, I'm going to give you the map. This is where we're going. But I need your help on the navigation.
Mm-hmm.
I need your help on the turn by turn. And so that way you get the way in from the other entities, all the way down to the players, out to some of the parents. I mean, booster club members, you know, how do we build this budget? You know, how do we get this team into these kind of exciting events that are going to cost money and give our players, you know, the extra, you know, nutrition and weight and equipment and all these things that we want that a first-class program has to have. And you just continuously, relentlessly kind of use your vision, your North Star, if you will, and you bring your stakeholders along with you, and you work together as you just methodically, you know, just kind of, and it doesn't go like this,
mm-hmm.
right? It goes like this, you know, like, because again, we're going to fail early, we're going to fail often, and we're going to learn lessons, and then we're going to put together a plan to make it even better.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, kind of in a rambling way, that is kind of what we set out to do, and I was able to get the right people on the bus in the mm-hmm. right seats, and we set forth.
Yeah, I've often heard you said weigh in leads to buy in.
Absolutely.
If you can get weigh in from your staff, weigh in from your players, weigh in from all those surrounding aspects, you then get buy in from everybody, and you need buy in, and you need everybody on the same page in order to get the program to where it's going to be.
You know, I often, you know, hear people talk about the good old days and the way it was, and I think we romanticize the past. I don't care. It's human nature. Like, yeah, maybe back in the day we could say jump and people would say how high, or, you know, we say, hey, go here, and they do it without question.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was the way. I don't know if it was or not. I'll tell you this. If I don't feel like I have some ownership and I have some input on what's going on, and I don't understand the why behind what you're asking me to do, I might do it. I might be compliant, but I don't know if I'm necessarily going to be committed. And I'm going to look for the first opportunity to be like, see, I told you that was wrong.
Yeah.
So I think that's where that weigh-in comes in, you know. And you know, weigh-in could probably be added into, you know, not just weigh-in, but also that that understanding and giving you that full information as to why. Is, I don't want to say the word sales, because sales kind of, you know,
it has a negative connotation.
Kind of has a but in a way it is. I need to sell to you why this is the right way. Like a quick aside, and it goes back to the week six Milton game. We were having a huge issue at West in 2016 coming out of halftime. So my my strength coordinator at the time says, you know what we should do is give them Cokes at halftime. And I looked at him. I said, dude, stop it. And he goes, no, I'm serious. I go, he goes, talk to marathon runners. Talk to that, that there's a blood sugar crap. He started going. I said, well, crap. All right, well, you sold me. I said, but I'm going to tell you what. These kids ain't going to buy it. He goes, well, our cross-country coach runs and competes in marathons and is an Ironman, and they know that. Go talk to him about it. And sure enough, I go and talk to him, and he's like, absolutely. At the 13-mile and this and that, there's always something like that. I said, would you come and talk to our players about that? So I went and solicited an expert. So when I told our players, who I knew were going to go back and tell their parents, who were going to be like, you're giving them Cokes at halftime, and we sold it to them. And you'll never – when we come out of halftime in that game, and these kids were freaking fired up.
Oh, my gosh.
And we kind of were prophets. We gave them a prophecy. Said, we're going to do this, and we're going to come out of halftime on fire.
Wow.
And we did. Dude, at the end of the game, they're like, yeah, we had Coach at halftime. Like, it was the craziest thing.
That's great.
I just, you know, but to me, that's a small kind of story or a microcosm of a bigger thing is it's okay to explain and expect players to even ask why. And if you don't have a great answer, then have you really even thought about, is this the right reason to do it? Or are you just doing it because it's the way we've done it, or because I saw somebody else do it that way, which, again, is a very poor leadership style. So, again, I think just that it's really more of a philosophical approach of how we approached kind of everything, from a reflective, introspective, can we do it better, looking at our processes and how we communicate to our players, and just doing our best to make everybody, if you're a part of this organization, I want you to feel like you have a vested role in it.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you right now, you sold me. So we've got a feeder game this weekend, and we're playing our first round matchup against the number one team, Hillgrove. And we got a 43-man roster. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to have 43 Cokes in the halftime wait for that team. So we can come out firing ready to go.
Bro, it's something that we did week six of 2016. I never went to a halftime without Coke.
Oh, my gosh. That's great. That's great. I want to talk a little bit about culture, right? Because that it's a big piece of who you are, big piece of Adam Clack, and of course the Adam Clack Academy. So let's talk about culture. I want to talk about BET, B-E-T. Where did that come from? How did you install that? How did you get the buy-in with that?
Well, I mean, again, this could be a five-hour conversation, so I'll try to give it to you in the simplest form, okay? And you don't have to go further than one leadership book to realize that casting a vision and having your behavioral, your core values, all that stuff outlined is an important thing. So naturally, people set out to do it. And as I became a head coach first and was trying to do that, it's a really tough process because there's so many good things out there. And, you know, I put together some stuff at West and I just noticed I wasn't getting quite the buy-in that I wanted. And the more I look back at it, I was like, it's because I'm trying again, trying to do what I think is right. So I really spent a lot of time of distilling it down. What do I truly believe in? And making it in a deliverable dose that people can actually get it. Because if you give somebody 20 different things that they need to do, this is our core values or this is our standard of excellence. I used to do that. I had 20 standards of excellence. And it's like, okay, man, you lost me at five.
Yeah.
So when we got to Milton, you know, our mission never changed. Building men of integrity. And I got it written out, but at the end of the day, it's three words. Building men of integrity. People can get behind that. Okay, so what does that look like? you know, that's something you're always chasing. You don't necessarily know if you ever get there. You know, maybe you do, you know, when you look back on life. But the real kind of sauce to it, what you drive your program with, to me, I call them my core values. A lot of people do. People can call it different things. That's not important. And when I broke it down into teamwork, learning how to work together as a team, which is the number one skill that people in the corporate world are looking for. Can you work efficiently in a team? And obviously we need to do that in the greatest team sport on the planet, bar none, teamwork. Can you set out, make a long-term goal, delay instant gratification, and work methodically at it day after day after day? That work ethic. I mean, obviously we all believe in the value of work ethic. And that kind of becomes also process and things like that. So that was bucket number two. And then bucket number three, the number one you know, kind of skill of successful people, you know, people call it grit, all right? But it's ultimately the way you can respond to adversity, the way that you can adapt, overcome, and grow. And that's what competitive toughness was to me. So as I took all these 20 things, 30 things, however many you want, I said, you know what? If I focus on these three buckets, everything else fits underneath it. And I truly believed it. And so everything we did filtered through those. So if we're going to add something in our program, does it fit? How do we make it? You know, I want to filter it through our kind of decision process of bet. And then we would push it back through of how do we align it tightly? I mean, down to the way we would do off-season workouts. You know, we're going to try to find a way to tie our core values into it some way to constantly, like shaving. You know, you're going to hear this over and over and over again. It's not going to waver because I believed it. And again, like, you can come up with your own words and your own things, and they're not wrong. It's just I truly believed in it, and I believed in it that way, and it was easy for me to speak to it. It was easy for me to embody it. And then I think where the secret sauce of it came, though, is we really did a great job, all the way down to how we give awards at our banquet. We're going to be in line with what we're saying about brotherhood, effort, and toughness. And I think over time, organically, which culture is always organic, it's dynamic, it's never constant. You either do it by design or you accept the one that you get. And so we were just intentional about driving that culture as deep as we could into our you know, kind of methodologies, into our minds, into our players' behaviors. And we started to see it. You know, embody itself.
One of the things I think is amazing is you've been out of the program now for how many years? Four, five years?
Three seasons.
Three seasons. Bet is still painted in the field house, right? Bet is still a huge part of that culture. And, you know, there's a funny story you told me that it didn't start out as BET, did it? How did it start out?
Well, it started out as Band of Brothers in this order is how I presented it. Band of Brothers, competitive toughness, relentless effort. And, you know, I don't know why I presented it that way. I kind of said if I had to rank them, it'd probably be there, even though they are kind of a flywheel effect. One supports the other. There is, it's kind of almost circular than linear. But current head coach, Ben Reeves, marketing genius as he is, he was looking at it one day. He said, you know, if we say brotherhood, effort, and toughness, that goes B-E-T. The kids are saying bet all the time. We could say bet, and it was genius.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that I'm glad you brought that back up, because part of getting that messaging across, see, messaging is very emotional, you know? And so if I can get it to stick and resonate in some way, the chances of it permeating are going to go up exponentially. And so, hey, kids thought it was cool. They break it down on bet, things like that. So any little... Hey, if it gets me one fraction of 1% closer to achieving that alignment to an embodiment of, it's worth doing.
Yeah.
And so bet was born.
So we're at Milton. You have taken it from a good program to a great program. We now have its first ever championship title at the school, thanks to your program. Why leave? What's the why? Look for another opportunity.
You know, there's probably a lot of psychoanalysts you could go into that. I think one thing is that I'm kind of wired to be a builder. And I think another thing is stated goals. You know, I stated in that interview is I'm here to build a national program. I think we can do that here. somebody that on the West Coast, when they see Milton football, they're gonna be like, oh yeah, that's a good program out of Georgia. And after 5 years, one state championship, another state runner up, got beat by Travis Hunter and the boys. I think he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's a good one. Yeah.
And I felt like, you know, we had a big group of seniors that we saw through, even into the personal life of my wife had, you know, gotten this promotion, and we're still working remote from COVID. And she came to me one day and she says, you know, you've always wanted to be a professional coach at college, whatever. I think now is a good opportunity for you to do it if you're ready. I swear, it was that conversation. It was maybe in June. And I was like, you know what? If we do what we're supposed to do this year, I think it is the jump off point.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have this program in a place to where, you know, it's really important to me to leave it better than you found it. I think that's important. I had coaches who were developed, and they were, if I didn't leave, I was going to lose both my coordinators. I knew that. They were that ready. That wasn't why I left, but they were that ready. That gave me a sense of comfort that, you know, something that you built and have pride in, if you leave it, can it sustain? And it was just that moment in life where it's like, I don't ever want to be distracted. This is an all-in job.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had aspirations to coach professionally. Maybe now's the time that's that perfect kind of jump-off moment, hand the torch, and go chase a dream. Because the last thing I ever wanted to do was sit in that seat and be looking for other things. Even though you have aspirations, man, it's football season, I'm all in. So it was just that moment where it was like, I think this is time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we've achieved what I set out to achieve. I think it's time to hopefully pass the torch to one of these guys who they're looking to build onto what we've built. And that's what this program needs now. And I didn't step down. I knew I was going to step down before the season even started. Kept it hush hush because I didn't want it to be a distraction. But before we broke for Christmas, I had already told my AD and principal that, hey, when we get back, I'm gonna announce I'm stepping down and I'm gonna go coach in college.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, when you get to college, everything you touch turns to gold, right? You never have to. You have not had to worry about any adversity. So, tell us about the college experience.
Well, I think this is what threw people for a loop. I didn't have a job yet. I just told myself, I was like, look, if I don't, one or two things are gonna happen. Either I am going to get wrapped up into the next season and not give myself the bandwidth to go look for a job, or I'm going to be looking for a job and still being the head coach of this program, which isn't fair to these kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I stepped down in the way I did, and I knew I had great connections, and I had a good idea that there would be opportunity out there, especially with the way that I was going to present it. Like, look, hey, I'm jumping out of shoot, guys. I'm willing to take any role you got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who couldn't add some...
Going back to where you were before,
yeah.
West.
And I ran it at the... It was actually in the first... It was in January, and it's the AFCA, the big coaches convention. And I talked with Will Healy, who was the head coach at Charlotte, who oddly enough was one of the first guys who came through Milton to recruit when I got there. And he was the first offer that Jordan Yates ever had.
Wow.
When he was at Austin Peay. Anyways, it was kind of an aside. But he's like, yeah, I would love to have you on my staff. You know, I'm trying to build out my support staff. We're moving up to the American Conference in a couple of years. And then it even worked out to the point to where, because he didn't really quite know how I was going to fit. He just knew he wanted somebody with my experience and my versatility. It would be a good fit. So I was able to finish out the school year, you know, to collect my paycheck, because
mm-hmm.
I was going to be taking a substantial pay cut, and I knew that. And then I joined in June. So I'm working up. I'm in the defensive room. I'm an offensive guy in a defensive room. Talk about being out of your comfort zone.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I go from the first seat in the room to one of the last.
Mm.
Talk about being outside your comfort zone.
Yep. You want to be again.
And then the season starts. I mean, we worked hard, as you would expect, and things weren't going well. And unfortunately, in October, as we had lost a couple ball games that we shouldn't have lost by the eyes of the people in charge, he was let go.
Mm.
And so now you've got an entire staff who's looking for another job. And I'm just sitting here, a neophyte in the college coaching world.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what now?
Wow. Yeah, so adversity is something that you're, you know, well versed in also. And so what does happen?
Well,
you're still on your journey trying to get to that professional level?
Still on my journey. And again, like, the whole vision was, hey, latch on with the staff and you'll work your way up, you know. Well, now I was going to have to latch on with another staff, start all over again probably. Well, an opportunity came up with networking. I made a random phone call in a parking lot waiting on a sandwich and reached out to my buddy Mark Mattioli, who had he was previously on the Vanderbilt staff, a young 30-something, had coached 5-6 years in the SEC. They got let go as Derek Mason's staff. They got let go during COVID. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to take a kind of a sabbatical from the SEC and this dog-eat-dog world. And he had Italian kind of heritage. He went and started coaching overseas, just in an Italian football league. And then he did it again. And I was just catching up with him. He goes, you won't believe it. He goes, there's a professional league that has just emerged a couple years ago, kind of in place of what the NFL Europe was. And Paris has an expansion team, and they just offered me the head coaching job. Funny you call, because I was actually thinking about you as maybe somebody who would be a potential candidate as offensive coordinator. Is that something you'd be interested in? And I'm just like, flew out of the world. Okay. Well, I go home. I talk to my wife, Ashley, about it, and she's like, well, let me talk with my bosses. And they're like, you're working remote in Charlotte. I don't care. As long as you can get your job done, you can work remote in France. And so a couple months go by, and one thing leads to another, and I was able to get that job. And so when the season ends, so this is what's crazy. The season ends, you know, Thanksgiving or whatever. By April, I'm in Paris getting ready to coach in this NFL Europe or European League of Football, and we got a month to prepare, and then we're gonna get ready to start our season in June. So in 18 months, I went from high school hashes to college hashes to NFL hashes.
Unbelievable.
I'm gonna tell you, that is something I never appreciated, how much the width of hashes change a football game. The NFL game, one reason why it looks so similar, everything's played in the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
You go to a high school game, everything's played on the edges.
Mm-hmm.
It really, really changes the game. Just, you know, as a learning moment there. So,
outside of that, what are some of the bigger differences in coaching at the professional level versus high school level?
Well, the obviously the biggest difference is just the age, right? You're dealing with men. I mean, you're dealing with people who, and especially in that league, because it was professional / semi-professional. I mean, you have guys who that's their full-time job, who are being paid to be over there. And then you got guys, because in that league, only 10 of your players can be outside the country. So if we have a 65-man roster, 55 of them have to be French citizens. And so it gets to a point there at the lower part of the roster, you're just anybody.
Yeah.
And you're talking guys who are making a couple hundred bucks, working a job during the day, and have wife and kids. And, you know, they may not make a couple grand. Mm-hmm. This is a unique professional, and you have to work around that type of stuff. But I think to the bigger point is just, it's really more of a peer-to-peer kind of conversation, a lot of first name, you know, basis, a lot of, you know, more socializing at times, you know, at least in that league. But it really is. But what was cool, and I've heard this, a professional doesn't really care if you are younger than them, 30 years older than them, man, woman, white, black, gray, polka dotted. They don't really care. They care if you can help them get better at what they're trying to do to get that next contract.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, there's something kind of powerful about that is, and it motivates you to be like, you know what? Like in high school and in college, you know, there's a lot of, you know, kind of emotion and immaturity about it where if I don't present myself in a certain way, maybe somebody doesn't listen to me. It was cool in that regard. Was like, the work is what mattered. The work is what mattered. It was very enjoyable, and I would love, you know, to have the opportunity to do it again one day if the timing's right and things like that. But it was really cool. Really cool experience.
And it's crazy. So it sounds like even at that level, right, it's still buy-in, weigh-in to get the buy-in, but the buy-in has a different purpose to it, right? For them, it's the buy-in is, how am I going to get better?
Right.
Right. For the long term.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think that's, you know, not that is missing in other places. I think your credibility or your ability to your competence it is important. Like if you're incompetent at what you're doing, people are going to stop listening. But the mentorship role in high school, I mean, you're dealing with, you know, 15-year-old young men and, you know, and parent involvement. And you really are part of the parenting network. I mean, when I use the word parent, I don't mean like mom and dad. It's just we as a society parent children. Mm-hmm. Like whether we believe it or not, we do because we influence them. There's still that a little bit in college. Less so, obviously. But when you get to the pros, you know, and when you're dealing with adults, that piece of it really comes down. Now, you're still mentoring, but, you know, you're dealing with men, you know, and it really becomes way more about the X's and O's.
Yeah.
Not that the relationship piece doesn't matter. It always matters. But that was probably the biggest difference. I mean, if you kind of thought about it on a, you know, if you're looking at a bar graph and, you know, the mentorship piece in high school is way elevated, you know, where the X's and O's, you know, they need to be good, but this is more important over here. As you get to the pro, it flips.
Flips, yeah, yeah. So let's bring it full back, back to where we are today, right? Why now are you shifting in the development of the Adam Clack Academy with its focus on coaching? What's driving that? What's driving this program?
Yeah, you know, so we moved 5 times in 2 years. You know, I'm clearly looking to see what else is out there. I hate the word midlife crisis. It's not a midlife crisis. However, when you're in your 40s and you've done the same thing for 20 years, I don't want to look back. You know, I think if I had a mantra, one of them would be no regrets. And I feel like I can always come back to high school football. And I probably will at some point. There's a high likelihood. I'm not ready to do that right now. I'm still looking to see what else is out there. You know, what else, whether it be a college job, a pro job, or whatever. But I don't want to get away from this sport, you know. And I feel like I have a lot to give back. And so I did a lot of reflection. I was like, you know what? I was a trainer once. Get back into the training world and kind of see where that takes me until, you know, the itch gets so strong or the desire gets so strong that I get pulled back. And then as I got into the training world, I really just kept having conversations about program building and about, you know, relationships with coaches and kind of my journey and kind of what I went through. And I was like, man, this is where I truly am the most passionate about and where I feel most confident in a way, because this was by design. It was my life's work building Bet. Like, yeah, Bet happened at Milton, but it was because of all the other things that happened. And what we put into building that. And it's something that I just believe in so wholeheartedly. Not that it won't continue to evolve and you know, change into a point. But I believe in those kind of staples that we built that Milton program with. And I just felt like, you know what? This is an opportunity for me to create something that 26-year-old Adam Clack was looking for. I can't tell you how much I was scouring, you know, the internet and reading books when I'm trying to formulate my plan, because I'm scared to death of the unknown and I'm getting mixed signals, and, you know, this one thing saying that and this one saying that, and oh god, now I gotta write a team's rules and regulation you know, like booster club. Anyway, all of that stuff I want to put together in a way that is truly, truly authentic. We did it, and actionable. I'm not just going to tell you what we did. I'm going to show you how we did it. I'm going to help you through the process. We're going to build, you know, lessons and courses and pick up the phone and call, you know, and you're having these problems. I want to be that person who can help somebody else go out and build a program that empowers their players, that leaves a lasting impact. You know, building men of integrity is what it's all about. And, you know, now I want to help other leaders build programs that help men and women. This is not just football. You know, this is truly leadership at any level, any sport. I'm passionate about it, and I just think I have a lot to offer the coaching community that can also then turn around and impact, you know, some guys that need it right now. That's our, that's our youth, you know, who are really going through it.
And it's interesting you said that, because I 100% you just in the conversations I've had with you and the time I've spent with you, I've learned just from hearing you talk, how to be a better coach. And I'm a better coach today than I was even a year ago, just from some of the stuff.
Awesome.
But it's 100% true. A lot of what you talk about can live in the business world. It can live in your personal life. It can live on the field, right? It's not just about football. And that's the amazing thing about you know, your story and why I'm so excited, because I know you have a passion for leading, you know, leading people, for mentoring people. And I think this program is going to be really, really good. And I know that there's probably a 26-year-old Adam Clack right now that's watching this, that's going to dive into this, that's going to be the next head coach of a state championship high school team. That's what I believe.
I believe, too. I believe so, too. And again, everything that we did at Milton, it's not necessarily going to apply. You know, that's going to be something that everybody's got to look. You're going to have to discern, you know, what's right for you. But that's part of what I want to do with this as well, is kind of that perspective piece. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there is no silver bullet, guys. There is no one size fits all. But there are fundamental philosophies and kind of methodologies of how you even just go about solving problems, assessing the job, assessing what's needed now, that I think I can help you with. And, you know, I like that you brought up the business world, because honestly, I got as much from business mentors and studying, you know, different successful CEOs and you know, healthy organizations. And I think that's what's helped made this so well-rounded, in my opinion, mm-hmm. is that it truly is it came from all kind of different things, because back to the networking, back to the relationships, the more you open yourself up to different ideas and just listening and getting other people's perspectives and perceptions, the more well-rounded it's going to make you in the long run. And to me, especially at the high school level, you need something that can adjust and fit, but also have, you know, some boundaries and some expectations that help these, you know, these young men and women. That's what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. They're looking for direction, but they also want to be able to see themselves in it and how they can and how they can add to the patchwork, mm-hmm. if you will. And that is part of what we will talk about in this academy, of the little ways that we were able to set, you know, the boundaries of this program, the core values. This is what you're going to inherit. Mm-hmm. But these are ways that you can make it your own as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I'm excited. I know that you got a lot of content you're working on. We're also going to have a lot of fun. I know we're going to tap into your network. We're going to be doing interviews with some great people.
Absolutely.
Like Strami, Coach Reeves. We're going to hear from people from all walks of life that are going to have similar, you know, shared values and insights that, again, coaches can take and put into their program. So I'm super excited about it. And I really just enjoy hearing your story. It's such a great story. I love the energy you bring every single day in every single interview. But that energy that you bring is also part of the secret to the success, right?
Wow.
So if people can match that energy, that's a good thing.
Well, you find something you're passionate about, man, and attack it. You mm-hmm. know, if you don't have energy for it, then you might be in the wrong place.
Yeah.
You know, yep. So there's no way around that one, in my opinion. So you better have some energy about it. And like you said, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to hear and learn from you guys. You mm-hmm. know, I'm going to learn so much, because like you're talking about, we're going to talk to a lot of different people. I mean, a lot of different coaches from other parts of the state, maybe even other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, I want to reach out to successful, you know, businessmen and shoot, mental health. I mean, mm-hmm. anything. It all matters in this position that you're in, because mm-hmm. you're dealing with young people who are trying to find their way in the world, and they're impressionable. And the more good stuff you can put into their minds, you know, and expose them to, the better it's going to make them, better it's going to make mm-hmm. your program, and then you're going to see results.
Yeah, and there's nothing more needed in this world than leaders.
That's right.
Leaders with a positive message and a positive attitude.
No
so
doubt.
The work you're doing is great. The work the coaches are doing out there is great and much needed. So I appreciate your time today.
Awesome,
been great talking, and look forward to more content coming out on the Adam Clack Academy. Thanks, coaches. You have a great day.